You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
This month of June is the anniversary of the 39th year of occupation. I'd like to dedicate my words to all the children who have and are being killed as I speak by the occupation forces. I would also like to dedicate my words to the mothers of these children who keep families in spite of the fact that they live in hell that neither you nor I can imagine. Mothers who hurry to make sandwiches when they see the bulldozer coming to destroy their houses. And last, I want to dedicate my words to my co-laureate of the Sakharov Prize, Professor Izzat Ghazawi, who was a writer and a poet, and who died of humiliation 2 years ago. Izzat Ghazawi lost his 15-year-old son in his schoolyard when his son rushed to help a wounded friend. Soldiers were shooting into the schoolyard. After that, he was arrested and put in solitary prison for 3 years without knowing why. When he was there, he decided to write a letter to an Israeli poet, and the letter was received by a deceased poet, Yair Horowitz, and together they founded a dialogue group of poets and writers that lasted 13 years. Before his death, he wrote to me that soldiers come every night to his house to harass him, break the furniture, and frighten the children. He asked me to go to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and ask them to stop it because he thought it was a mistake. And then he wrote, "I'm afraid they're trying to silence my voice." Well, his heart knew the truth and couldn't take it anymore, and he died. And I promised him that his voice would not be silenced. I want to say something about the title of this evening, No Peace Without Justice. It's a strange title. It seems argumentative, as if someone had offered peace without justice. Frankly, I have no idea what is peace, and I have no idea what is justice. I only know that the words peace and justice are cover words for the worst crimes against humanity that are carried on today all over the world. These cover words include also words such as freedom, democracy, God, and the good of the nation. In Israel now, politicians are organizing demonstrations in the south of the country against Qassam missiles throwers. The incited people ask for justice in order to live in peace. This form of justice is this extermination of the Palestinians in Gaza. They convince the people in Sderot that the only way for them to live in peace is to have other people and their children massacred. I think that people like George Bush or Ehud Olmert or some Canadian leaders who send their soldiers to the other part of the world to kill children they don't even know live in peace because they think they are doing justice, at least to themselves. But the truth is that the only place where peace and justice prevail is in the underground kingdom of dead children. This is the only place in the world where everybody is equal, where nobody judges you by the piece of cloth you put on your head or by your circumcision. And these children, our children, make us, or at least make me, want to redefine the camps, redefine the word we. I think there's no other word in the world which is so ideologically charged like the word we. I was forced by death to ask myself this question when death put me in the camp of the victims of the occupation. But even before that, I never wanted to be in the camp of the executioners. And that means that in my camp, there are many more people with keffiyeh than with a kippah on their head. When Ehud Olmert, today our Prime Minister, came to pay condolences as the Mayor of Jerusalem, I refused to see him or shake his hand. A reporter asked me, "How come you receive condolences from the other side?" And I told her very spontaneously, "I don't. I refuse to shake his hand. Because for me, this man was the other side, not my Palestinian friends." My we is defined by people who want to live in peace, by people who believe that children have rights and are not to be used as chips in the blood market of politicians. My we includes mothers whose motherhood has not been perverted, and that means mothers who do not send their children to kill other children, and mothers who do not feel consoled by the death of other mothers' children. And that means that it does not include Jewish mothers who live in the occupied territories. My we include the people from the Bereaved Families Forum who believe in dialogue and not in mind infection. And of course, the young people of the Young Movement Combatant for Peace, who maintain an admirable dialogue between themselves. One of the projects of the forum, the Families Forum, is a project called Hello Peace, where you can dial a free number from either side and speak to people on the other side, Palestinians and Israelis. In the first 3 months of this project, there had been 800,000 minutes of talk. If our politicians, who set such a high price on every word they utter, but set no price at all on bullets, had spent half of it in talk, our children would have been alive today. Unfortunately, dialogue is a very strange praxis to the world today. Mind infection is much more common. Our children are mind infected. This is the only term that can explain how nice Jewish children, or nice American children, or nice British children become monsters once they are in uniform. Their mind infected into believing that killing other children and sacrificing themselves is for the good of the nation, or God, or freedom, or democracy. Israeli children learn that the population is divided into Jews and non-Jews. It doesn't matter who these non-Jews really are. Whatever they learn in history, in geography, even in science, is divided into Jews and non-Jews. Jewish agriculture versus non-Jewish agriculture. Jewish electricity versus non-Jewish electricity, Jewish water versus non-Jewish water. In no Israeli textbook is there one photograph of a Palestinian or any Arab as a human being, modern, productive, normal. The only representation of these people, who are neighbors, actually, is either by a racist caricature of the typical Arab from Thousand and One Nights with pointed shoes, keffiyeh, and a camel, and a mustache, of course, or photographs of empty places where they tell you this is where the Palestinian problem matured and festered. Israeli textbook call a whole nation a problem to be solved. And this is almost no more than 60 years after the Jews were called a problem to be solved. No map in any Israeli school book shows the international law borders of the country. The international laws are taught to be inapplicable in our reality because we act according to divine laws. The children of Israel learn about the greater land of Israel and not about the state of Israel. The state of Israel is represented as an accident of a forced ceasefire and therefore as temporary. The Palestinian areas are incorporated into the state, but whenever there is a report about population, education, employment, etc., the legend of the map says about these areas, an area without data, which means without people. When you have a map of Jerusalem, institutions, government, administration, religious sites, you never see any Muslim institution or religious site. This is part of the education that mind infects our children into believing that people who live 100 meters from them are not human beings, and that exterminating them is actually doing good for the nation, good for the Jews. All the massacres that are mentioned in textbooks, and there are a few, are rhetorically built in a way that in the end, you know, it was good for the nation. It is not very hard to educate people or to mind infect people not to see the other as a human being. I think it's far easier than to educate them to see other people as human beings. Last night when I came here, a young girl, officer in the, you know, passport inspection, yelled at me very rudely because I did not pronounce my working place in a way that she could understand. And I had to repeat 3 times, Tel Aviv University. She doesn't know what Tel Aviv University is, but she knows she has to be rude to people who come from outside. Mind infection and mental maps are very hard to erase. Racism is very easy to plant and very hard to uproot. Our children live immersed in a racist discourse which has no equal in what is called the enlightened world today, excuse me. Not only towards the Arabs. Racism does not stop at the checkpoints, but it goes on against Arab Jews, against so-called Jewish immigrants the Jewish agency brings from overseas, Ethiopians, everyone, against everyone. The election campaign in Israel a few months ago was worth of an election campaign in a fascist state. People on television may tell jokes about Arabs having sex with goats, about school violence being a Mideastern habit, about religious Jews in the most anti-Semitic way that is not permitted in any other country. This is the atmosphere our children grow up with. Our children who live, who reside under the earth, remind us that we have not done enough to eradicate racism. We have not done enough against mind infection. We've actually betrayed them because we promised them a better world and a good life. The only way for me to do them justice and maybe gain some peace for ourselves is to try to eradicate racism, bigotry, mind infection, and blind loyalties, and to raise the voice of mothers. The voice of mothers is the most oppressed, suffocated voice in the history of man. Because the voice of mothers is the voice of dialogue and tolerance. In all our histories and mythologies, always, in a moment of crisis, there's a mother who defied the authorities, who deceived the king, the husband, or the father in order to save the children. That's why in the Jewish Talmud, they say that mothers are prophets. And the explanation is that they always knew what's best for their children, and they did whatever they could to achieve that. And I think this kind of motherhood is today dead or perverted to the point that mothers actually send their children to become soldiers of so-called leaders who have nothing but interest and profit for themselves in their mind and serve them, as I said, as chips in the blood market. The only way we can help our children is to refuse them to cooperate with this. To refuse them for even by forsaking our relationships with them. Many mothers come to me and say, but my son is going to hate me if I don't let him go to the army. And I say, let him hate you for a year or two or five or ten. My own son, my both sons, my eldest sons, served in the army when the tragedy happened and they lost their sister. My eldest son, who was in an elite unit, which was his heart desire and his aspiration to the point that nobody could say anything, not even my father, who served in the army for 40 years and then dedicated himself to peace. My father was the first one to meet our chairman Arafat in Tunis with the help of his Palestinian friend Issam Sattawi, who was murdered for this friendship later on. Before he died, he implored my son Elik not to enlist and to go to the university instead. He told him that an army of peace needs educated officers. He didn't live to see the rest of it. And I told my son there, you have to lie to your grandfather because he's going to die. And we want him to die in peace. Nevertheless, he enlisted. And then he realized the futility. And not only the futility, but he realized, and he keeps saying that now and all the time when he speaks for the new movement, Combatants for Peace, he realized that indirectly he was the cause for his sister's death. His brother was just 1 month in the army, and he believed that by being a good soldier, he's going to save the whole world. Now, there's a very perverted law in Israel, which is famous for perverted laws, that in a bereaved families, the parents have to sign for the children an agreement if that they allow them to become fighting soldiers. And that means that they confront you with your children in such times. I refused to sign, and he was very depressed. And as we are the family that we are, I got a telephone call from the chief of staff. I was in London at the time, and he called me to London, and he said, "Lady, your little games cost us money. We invested in this boy." I told him his little games cost me much more. And then, in order to revenge or to get back at me, they transferred him from the elite unit where he was to a garage. There he met people he would never have met anywhere else. What is called in Israel the second Israel. Today, when he speaks, and he does all over Europe, about refusing, because he became refusnik after that, he says that my mother taught me to refuse by refusing me. And my days in the garage not only saved my life, but saved my human image. As for being a man, he wrote, this would come with the first child. This only to show you how difficult it is to erase mind affection. Because the children in Israel are so mind infected, they cannot even conceive if they are what we call people of value, not to contribute to their society, and the only way they are taught to contribute is to die a heroic death or kill in a heroic way, whatever that means. So our duty as mothers, I believe, is really to fight that, to stand in the way of our children and refuse them to cooperate with the forces of evil, namely with the democratic powers of what is called the enlightened world today, to help them to redefine themselves as human beings, and to help the world remember that the death of a child is the death of the whole world. One of the greatest Hebrew poets said, Satan has not yet invented the revenge for the blood of a small child. And this is not because Satan has no imagination. It is because after the death of a child, there is no other death, and there is no other life, and there is no revenge. The child takes with its small body and its small bones the war, its causes, and its consequences. We are here, I believe, to remind the world that all the historic processes and all the international discussions which have not yet saved one child from death, neither the European Parliament, nor the Vatican, nor the UN, nor the Nobel Prize Committee, who rewards ex-murderers every year instead of rewarding persevering mothers, have not saved one child from death. And we are here to remind the world that all these big people and big discussions and big money and big words are finally reduced to the small body of the little girl in her new uniform and her new school bag lying in the dust in Gaza, her little body pierced with as many bullets as protocol allows. And we are to remind the world of the question asked by the Russian poet Anna Akhmatova, who also lost her child to a ruthless regime. Why does this streak of blood rip the petal of your cheek? Thank you.